chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's the can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Good morning. It's Tuesday, December 10th, and you are listening to the College Football Daily, a 24/7 sports podcast dedicated to catching you up on and breaking down the day's college football news. My name is Trey Scott. On Monday, 24/7 Sports released its annual True Freshman All-American team for the year of 2019. What that is, it's pretty self-explanatory. We make up the best college football team possible using only true freshmen, not redshirt freshmen, not transfers, true freshmen. So on our team, which you can find online at 247sports.com, we've got Sam Hallett, quarterback from North Carolina. He just broke Trevor Lawrence's record for most touchdown passes by a true freshman in college football history. We've got LSU cornerback Derek Stingley Jr. Last time we saw him was Saturday. He was picking off Jake Fromm twice. Stingley was the number two recruit in the class of 2019. He looks like he might be the best cornerback in college football. We've got a lot of other good players on that team, and we've brought in 24/7 Sports Director of Scouting Barton Simmons, who is also CBSSports.com national college football writer, to talk about that list with us. I'm about to bring on Barton. After that, I'm going to introduce you to this year's Heisman finalist. Lastly, thank you to everybody who came out Friday to the SiriusXM Pandora Studios in Atlanta for our live event. We had a lot of fun. We were treated like rock stars. Someone made a mistake, because we are certainly not, but thank you to anyone who was there and for your continued support. Anyway, here's Barton.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
Okay, Barton, as we look at this team, was the toughest decision at quarterback where we went with Sam Howell, but Jaden Daniels and Keaton Slovis at Arizona State and USC respectively would have been great choices almost any other year.
Yeah, it was, I don't know if it was the toughest choice, because ultimately when we really sort of doled out the numbers and played the resume game, I mean, Sam Howell had a pretty dang good year, and really is the reason North Carolina is a bowl team and competitive this year. I think if Sam Howell wasn't at North Carolina this year, if they didn't win that battle against Florida State late in the process, I'm not sure where we put North Carolina in terms of their win total this fall. So I think that ultimately Sam Howell was the move, but it was just sort of a fun year among true freshman quarterbacks. I mean, even those, you know, Keaton Slovis, obviously big year. Jaden Daniels, obviously big year, but John Rhys Plumlee, we snuck him on there in the all-purpose role, Max Duggan, I mean, ups and downs.
Bo Nix.
You know, Bo Nix. There was a lot of true freshmen.
Hank Bachmeier beat Florida State week one.
Yeah, it was an active year for true freshman quarterbacks, which was kind of fun to watch. And frankly, most of them were guys that we all kind of knew about and were pretty highly regarded coming out of high school. Maybe Keaton Slovis, the one exception to that. But the quarterback class kind of lived up to its billing coming in.
Yeah, like I remember week one saying, okay, the week of the true freshman, when you had all those big games. But in the recruiting process, it felt like the word on the class of 2019 was not that strong at quarterback. And the number one kid, Spencer Rattler, will have his moment next year. You saw the number two guy, and I'm just going off the 24/7 Sports Composite rankings for pro style quarterback. Ryan Helinski had his moments, of course, at South Carolina. Graham Mertz never got off the bench at Wisconsin, but he'll get a chance eventually. So, like, did this class, when you sort of look back on it, like exceed expectations, actually?
Well, I don't know, because I think our issue with the quarterback class last year, or in that 2019 cycle, was that it wasn't, there weren't that many of these first round guys, like guys that we felt like was the next Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Josh Rosen, you know, that kind of crew. And I think as the process winded down in 2019, we came to believe there was a pretty good depth, but just not that no-brainer guy, with the exception of Spencer Rattler, and we had a hunch maybe Jaden Daniels. And I think in a lot of ways it sort of played out like that. Like a lot of guys are capable of playing, a lot of guys that are good players. But among all these guys we talked about, not many of them are guys we're sitting here and we're going to start projecting as future first rounders. We're going to project them as really productive college quarterbacks that have a chance to grow into that. But I still don't think there's anyone that we're sitting here and saying, wow, what a freak talent. I think what we're saying is, wow, these guys are really good players.
We'll move on to the running backs. Usually a plug-and-play position. But you had the number one and two guys in the class, Trey Sanders and John Emery Jr., for separate reasons, not make much of an impact. Sanders is out for the year with an injury he suffered in August at Alabama. John Emery just couldn't get over the hump of the depth chart. So you end up going with Breece Hall at Iowa State, George Helani at Boise State. I won't spend too much time on these guys, but Helani's interesting. He was number 505 player in the composite, number 34 running back, but the top 247 actually had him as a four-star.
Yeah, I'll give credit to Greg Biggins on that one. He was a kid out of Southern California that was really productive. And frankly, I remember kind of watching him on film and saying, you know, he looks a little plodding to me. Like what's the deal? Do we really like him as a four-star, Greg? And Greg was very firm and convicted in believing he was a really good player. And so that was a great call by him, because he obviously put together a great freshman season and has been outstanding. Breece Hall, the other one on the team, is another kind of win for the 24/7 sports rankings. I'm not sure where he was on the composite, but we were definitely out front on his ranking and really believed in him because of his versatility. He's a good pass catcher. He's big. We invited him to the All-American Bowl and where he was had a good showing there. And this was a year, where Iowa State needed someone to step up at running back. And I suspected that guy was going to be a freshman, because Jirell Brock is the other guy they brought in that's a good player. And sure enough, Breece Hall really took the reins and particularly late in the year came on as one of the top backs in the Big 12.
Yeah, Breece Hall was the number 7 running back in the top 247 compared to number 22 in the composite. So at the receiver position, only went with two. C.J. Johnson at East Carolina gets one of the spots. David Bell at Purdue, the second year in a row, a true freshman receiver at Purdue, is absolutely balled out. He had 86 catches, 1,000 yards, 7 touchdowns. I remember David at the All-American Bowl last year. He's a number 113 player in the composite. And it was like, yeah, he's just going to Purdue. So do you remember this recruitment? Was this a case of just everyone else being full or what?
No. This is a case of Purdue having a really good class in 2019. Because keep in mind, this is not the only guy on this list from Purdue. The other one's a 5-star for us, George Karlaftis. And this is just he's an Indianapolis kid, so he's in state. This was a recruitment that Purdue won, and why not? As a receiver, sometimes you may scratch your head at a guy choosing not necessarily a brand school, but following what Rondale Moore had just done as a freshman, you could certainly see the appeal of going to a place like Purdue for David Bell, particularly with it being an in-state program. And so he is a really productive high school receiver. He was a really talented basketball player at a really good basketball program. So he had this sort of versatility to his game. Not the fastest guy, but really good ball skills, body control, and those sort of that kind of intangible sort of traits, unteachable traits. And so that's not surprised that he's had success. And man, it sure would be fun if we can get him and Rondo Moore on the field at the same time.
Yeah, 2020. Tight end. We thought this might be Baylor Cup in the preseason.
Frankly. Yeah.
So Baylor Cup, for those who don't know, was the highest ranked tight end in the history of the top 247. He's a 5-star for us. He suffers a broken leg in August. So we're like, okay, well, Here, but then in steps Jalen Widermeyer from Texas A&M, number two guy in a two tight end class, 31 catches, 419 yards, six touchdowns. The second year in a row, Jimbo Fisher's had a tight end put up prolific numbers. Do you remember Widermeyer?
I do. Yeah, I mean, the body type was really unique, and I remember talking to some people at A&M. They felt like he was going to be a good player. I mean, this is not a surprise. I don't, you know, maybe obviously they expected Baylor Cup to be the guy, and Jimbo Fisher, that offense, it's so important to have a tight end, and it was, what's my guy's name that was there? Jay Sternberger was the guy in that first year. He goes off NFL, Baylor Cup was supposed to be the next man up, and was having a good preseason, good offseason, looked like the guy, and Jalen Widermeyer early in the year didn't have that much of an impact. True freshman, obviously not a big deal, but as the season progressed and he started progressing, I think you saw the offense really improve. I think he opened some things up for that team. I mean, he can be an inline guy, he can be a blocker. He was obviously a tough matchup as a pass catcher as well. Didn't put up like gaudy stats, but I think again, just adding that tight end element late in the year was a really critical factor in A&M starting to evolve a little bit and come along offensively.
We have five offensive linemen. We're only going to focus on one of them. I'm going to read out the other guys, though. Nick Broeker at Ole Miss starts 11 of 12 games. Dante Lucas at Florida State, former four-star player in the composite. He was sort of a bright spot for that offensive line as the highest-graded starting lineman, according to PFF. Brian Hudson at Virginia Tech, one of two true freshmen to get a lot of playing time, a lot of starting ops on that O-line. And Wanya Morris at Tennessee, who is one of the two five-stars offensive linemen assigned with the Vols. He started 9 games. I'm going to circle back to Evan Neal, though, who was the number 7 overall player in the composite, ranked as an offensive tackle for good reason. He's 6'7", 360 pounds. He played guard this year. If Alex Leatherwood goes pro early, as we expect, most people at Alabama think Evan Neal is a left tackle of the future.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly has that kind of frame. He's almost Orlando Brownish in terms of his, you know, what his skill set is out there on the edge. And, you know, he was really good. And that Alabama offensive line that was not a weak spot this year where they just needed some help. You know, they had some freshmen playing on the defensive line and in the linebacker position that were basically based on just kind of injury and depth issues. I don't think offensive line was that. I think that was Evan Neal just going and winning that job and putting together a really good season. So this was, honestly, there was a lot of good options at offensive line, and we could have probably put 5 different players in than we chose and been pretty defensible in that. So, you know, any of these guys to be on this list, I think is a credit to them.
The defensive line class is great. Purdue's George Karloftis should be one of the Big Ten's best players next year. USC's Drake Jackson had 3 sacks in his first 4 games. Tyler Davis at Clemson took over the defensive tackle spot, and he quickly eased any concerns about how the Tigers would replace all 4 of those defensive linemen. I want to stick on Kayvon Thibodeau, though, from Oregon, the number 2 overall player in the composite. So what was your feeling when you watched the Pac-12 title game? And Kayvon obviously breaks out, 2.5 sacks, blocks a punt, just an absolute monster. And you've got national media tweeting, you've got NFL guys saying, I can't wait for this guy in 2022. Are you kind of just smiling like, yeah, like, welcome to the party?
Yeah, but you know what? Like, I think with Kayvon, that what's so exciting, it's like, you know, he was one of these guys who, I think he finished, I mean, he was top 10 in our rankings, maybe 7th or 9th or something like that, final. You know, he was the type of guy who there was questions. People raised concerns about just sort of how focused is he and kind of this sort of nebulous, like, how important is football type of stuff. And you always have to sort of take that stuff with a grain of salt because no one really knows. And a lot of times it's kind of false and unfair assumptions and these sort of things. So that he has made a splash as quickly as he has as a true freshman, There was never any doubt about the talent, but I think that this can kind of put to rest any question about how quickly he's going to adapt and how well he's going to handle college life and all those sort of things. And man, he's been outstanding all year long. And I think that now you kind of take the ceiling off what he can be, and you know, this guy could be a future first round or like number one pick. He's that kind of a talent, and he was frankly the number one player through most of the cycle.
He was your first number one player.
He was our first number one. He was our number one in our initial update before sophomore seasons. I think he hung on to number one following sophomore seasons. Started to slip a little bit as some of the other guys started to catch him after that. But he's, man, what a difference maker for Oregon, particularly as it tries to build out the line of scrimmage, which is so important to Mario Cristobal, and he understands that. And Kayvon is going to be a anchor to that unit now for two more years.
Kayvon lands at number six in the top 247. So we went with a 4-2-5 scheme. So you got two linebackers. Speaking of Oregon, Oregon State's got a guy on the list, Omar Spates, lowly rated recruit, 3-star. He had 73 tackles, 3.5 sacks. The other player, the other linebacker, is Henry To'oto from Tennessee, the number 44 overall player in the composite, number 3 outside linebacker. Was a massive signing day win for the Vols over Alabama when we thought really most of the time Alabama should be in the mix, and I think a few other schools were involved too. But Henry T had 64 tackles, and he was Tennessee's first true freshman starting linebacker since 2011.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing about Henry To'oto is that he came to Tennessee with this class that was so important to Jeremy Pruitt's future, and I think the thing that was really evident early on with that class was that the football character of that group was really strong, and none better or stronger than Henry To'oto, who comes from De La Salle High School, one of the most prolific, high-profile, juggernaut high schools in America. But the reputation of that high school is super disciplined, super tough, physical, just old school in the way they play. And Henry To'oto came in as this, you know, the rumors around that program was he's one of the best they've ever had. And so for him to come to Tennessee at a position of need and be as impactful as he was, I think really speaks to, again, sort of an encouraging sign for what's to come for Tennessee. Because that guy, I think, is going to be one of these sort of three-year just the leaders of that team, kind of anchors of that defense.
We've got five defensive backs. We're going to focus on two of them. The guys who we won't focus on were great. Tijuan Mullen from Indiana became the Hoosiers' best cornerback. Ahmad Gardner at Cincinnati.
Tijuan Mullen's the younger brother of Trayvon Mullen.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And thanks for the pronunciation check. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes when you look at so many names, you just start butchering names that you should be able to get. Ahmad Gardner, 6'2", at Cincinnati. PFF super high on him. He had 3 interceptions. And then Damani Richardson at Texas A&M. His highlight for the season was an 11-tackle game versus Alabama, including an interception of Tua Tagovailoa. Let's talk about the two of the higher-rated guys here. Kyle Hamilton at Notre Dame was someone who you loved, I remember, ever since maybe the opening finals or before that probably. You gave him a 5th-star in the top 247. He was the number 60 player in the composite, and he was Notre Dame's best defensive back this year, team-high 4 interceptions, 6'4" guy, like looks like a future first-rounder.
Yeah, so I played safety, so this is a position near and dear to my heart, and I think Kyle Hamilton is, I think he might be my favorite safety prospect I've ever covered, and that was and going into his senior year, I wouldn't have necessarily said that. He was a long, lanky player who had really good flashes on film, really good tools, but was so far from a finished product, and still sort of learning how to operate all his long limbs and how to organize it all. But as you mentioned, the opening finals, he broke out, balled out in that setting, was awesome. One of the best players there. Then as a senior, his senior film was, I don't know what else you want to see in safety film than what he showed. It was as good a senior safety film as I've seen. And so at that point, he's bulking up, he's filling out, and he becomes this just badass. And I think, you know, Notre Dame returned both their safeties, good players. And for him to get on this list means that Notre Dame had to be creative in making sure they found ways to get him on the field. And that was a priority for them. And, you know, he delivered. I think you couldn't watch a Notre Dame game from about the midway point in the season on and not notice him. In particular, I remember watching Notre Dame against, I want to say it was, oh gosh, I hope I'm not butchering this, but I think it was USC where they basically used sort of a three safety package all game long, and they would sort of roll the Alohi Gilman into the box a bunch, and sort of Kyle Hamilton was his back end adjuster and was just sort of flying around the field. And just the way they were able to use him and the different, I mean, he could be a deep safety. He could be a run support guy that rolls down to the box. He can, you can get man coverage at 6 foot three plus. He's just such a unique prospect.
So from your favorite safety prospect ever to the best cornerback prospect you've ever scouted, Derek Stingley Jr. more than lived up to the hype. He was the number three player in the composite, but number two in the top 247. And you almost had him number one overall, but that's a tough, like, cornerback's a tough position to make number one overall. But Stingley has six interceptions, two against Jake Fromm in the SEC title game. He might be the best cornerback in college football. He is a surefire top five pick in 3 years.
Yeah, yeah, just such a sure thing. Just, you know, and he was a sure thing coming out. I guess, you know, if you wanted to knock him, he didn't play a high-level competition, but, boy, he dominated that competition. And it's so important at cornerback to me, ball skills, and we've seen it. We've seen why with Derek Stingley. He has as good a ball skill as you could ask for. He played receiver. He turned kicks. He intercepted every time someone threw at him in high school. So long, very focused. Dad's a coach. Grandfather played in the NFL. Just, I mean, every box to check, he can check it. He's got the elite testing numbers to verify the athleticism. And so, I mean, he's just as sure, he is as sure a thing as of a prospect as we've seen. And again, the only thing keeping him from number one was didn't play a premium position, but even that we might look back on and regret not making him one, because I mean, he's sort of lived up to every expectation anyone could have had for him.
Yeah, our Chris Hummer wrote a feature on Stingley this week, and he grew up even like at age 5, 6, or 7 with, instead of like superhero posters on his wall, he had like route trees. Like his dad would draw routes on pieces of paper, and Derek would memorize them, and they go drill them outside. We'll rip through the specialist. Cade York from LSU gets our kicker spot. Austin McNamara from Texas Tech, our punter. Our returner is Joshua Youngblood at Kansas State, who is someone to watch in 2020. He had three kickoff returns in 15 attempts, three in the last four games. Yeah. So this is a guy, everyone, file away. Josh Youngblood could be a monster in 2020 or 2021 if people kick to him. The all-purpose selection was fun. I know Nebraska fans are upset Wandale Robinson didn't get the nod, but I like what we did here. We packaged Ole Miss's two sort of unconventional guys, Jerron Ealy, who is just did everything you'd want out of a five-star running back. He ran, he caught, he returned a kick for a touchdown. And then John Rhys Plumlee, a quarterback. It's safe to say quarterback's never been an all-purpose selection, but he had 1,000 yards rushing with an average of 6.64 that ranks number 18 nationally.
Yeah, his rushing yards per game was among the best in the country, I feel like. And you just had to get him on there, particularly because I think he really is the reason Ole Miss was competitive this year, is the reason Ole Miss kind of was fun to watch. Frankly, you know, you could make a case he's the reason Matt Luke should have kept his job, but didn't quite do enough there. Either way, just so exciting of a player, and I think the way he was inserted into that offense really transformed that team this year. So you just kind of had to get him on there. Not a true quarterback, so I think you can find kind of squeeze him into that all-purpose role and handcuff him with Jerron Ealy, and just sort of, you know, you can look at, there's some exciting pieces for Lane Kiffin now to play with.
Yeah, well, they got an interesting quarterback scenario with, you got Matt Corral there, John Rhys Plumlee. Sort of Lane Kiffin's probably going to have to choose one pretty soon. We'll ride out with the fact that Stingley Jr. was named the 24/7 Sports True Freshman of the Year. Pretty good company. Past recipients include Rondale Moore of Purdue in 2018, Jonathan Taylor in 2017, Ed Oliver 2016, Calvin Ridley in 2015. So you've got at least three first-round picks on that list. Stingley will be another one, maybe Rondale Moore too. Thank you, Barton. All right, thank you to Barton. It's always fun to talk to him. Some evening news for everybody. The Heisman Trust has announced four finalists this year, the 2019 season. It's always fun when we have four. Rarely does it happen that way anymore because the ballot calls for three. So here they are. LSU quarterback Joe Burrow, big shocker. He's a runaway favorite. Burrow passed for 48 touchdowns to 6 interceptions this season, completing 77.9% of his passes. That's the highest completion percentage in college football single-season history. Joining Joe Burrow in New York will be Justin Fields, the Ohio State quarterback. Just one interception this season, 40 passing touchdowns. His teammate Chase Young made the finalists list, 16.5 sacks, which leads the nation with 21 tackles for loss. And the stat that I think doesn't get enough credit, 7 forced fumbles. This is all despite Chase Young, of course, being suspended for 2 games. Ohio State coach Ryan Day wanted J.K. Dobbins to be the third Buckeye finalist, but he did not make the list. Jalen Hurts did. The Oklahoma quarterback struggled in that Big 12 title game against Baylor, but he's still going to New York. 32 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. He completed 72% of his passes for 3,634 yards. He also ran for 18 touchdowns in his only season in Norman after transferring from Alabama. Speaking of grad transfers, South Carolina quarterback Jake Bentley announced his exit last week. Monday afternoon, he announced he picked Utah. He's probably the favorite to win that job with Tyler Huntley exiting. A little coaching carousel update for you guys. We touched on this in yesterday's podcast, but it is official now. Clemson co-offensive coordinator Jeff Scott will be South Florida's next head coach. But if you're wondering, yes, he will still help the Tigers in the playoff. That's usually what happens when a playoff-bound coach leaves somewhere else. Oregon offensive coordinator Marcus Arroyo is reportedly close to becoming UNLV's newest head coach. And get this, Butch Jones, yes, the former Tennessee head coach who's been an Alabama staffer the last 2 seasons, is seriously in the mix at Colorado State, per report, so we'll keep an eye on that. That's going to do it for today's episode of the College Football Daily. If you appreciate what we're doing, we'd love for a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. For Barton Simmons, for Connor Tapp, and for our producer, Tawny Levitt, I'm Trey Scott, and we'll see you on Wednesday for the next edition of the College Football Daily.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount+, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.